Thank you for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. You are listening to episode 132. I really enjoyed recording this one and really enjoyed my guest today, Mr. Danny LaBelle. We recorded at the Bird City Comedy Festival this past weekend, where comics from around the country converged in Phoenix at the Renaissance Hotel for a four-day comedy festival. And one of the featured performers, as he was last year at the inaugural season of the Bird City, was Danny. And I had been aware of Danny's comedy and storytelling from hearing him a few years ago on This American Life. And I didn't really make the connection until I saw him in person, but one of his most memorable stories has to do with his raising chickens in New York. Just Google Danny LaBelle, go to his website, DannyLaBelle.com, and find links to his YouTube page and other things where you can hear his stories, watch his video clips, and link up with his podcasts. Again, when I first heard that story, I wasn't familiar with who was saying it, but I did, who was telling the story, but I did thoroughly enjoy it. And then last year, I got a chance to meet the man behind the stories and enjoyed watching him perform. And then when I saw him on this year's show, this year's festival, I made a point to make sure to sit down and talk with him, and he graciously agreed to record this podcast. So we'll hear some stories. We'll hear how he was one of the podcasting pioneers. I kind of dub him the Podfather. He started one of the pioneers. He was doing a radio show in New York and started posting those shows up on the web long before the word podcasting was around. So he was a real early proponent of online listening and things, which we now know as podcasts. Through that and through his stand-up career and his storytelling career, he has made friends with and come in contact with some of the biggest names in stand-up comedy in the 20th and now 21st century, working with alongside Jackie Mason, George Carlin, Patrice O'Neill, and so many others. And it was a real treat to sit down and hear him tell some of those stories. We talked everything from his faith, religion, comedy, storytelling, the faces and names he's come in contact with over the years, and even threw in some weight loss there. So we covered it all at the Bird City Comedy Festival. I hope you enjoy it. I sure enjoyed recording it. You can check out, like I said, Danny LaBelle's website at DannyLaBelle.com, where there are links to his two current podcasts, The Modern Day Philosophers, which is located at moderndayphilosophers.net, where he sits down with some of the biggest names in comedy, and they talk all kinds of stuff, but it's all based around the teachings of a famous philosopher, and they often don't know much about it, so it's an exploration of learning and listening, so it's a lot of fun to listen to. So download and subscribe to Modern Day Philosophers at moderndayphilosophers.net. And also, he hosts the Mostly Bull Market. That is where he sits down with a comic and they talk finances and investments and have a lot of laughs doing so. I got a chance to watch him record one of those live with comedian Paul Verzi this past fall at the Big Pine Comedy Festival, where Danny was also a featured performer. That will be happening again, the third annual Big Pine Comedy Festival, September 14th through 16th, 2017. They are a sponsor of today's show. The Big Pine Comedy Festival, September 14th through 16th in Flagstaff. Information on that is at bigpinecomedyfestival.com. I'm not sure if Danny will be there again this year, but I sure hope he will be, because I really, really enjoy seeing him on stage. We are also brought to you this week by BarkBox. You can use the link at milehighshow.com and use the code MILEHIGH when you check out for a free month of treats for your furry friends. BarkBox, where you can get natural treats and super fun toys for your furry friends. Happy pets make happy homes. We are also brought to you by Amazon. Use that Amazon link right there next to BarkBox at milehighshow.com. It bookmark it too. Use that as your bookmark for Amazon for all your online shopping. It lets Amazon know you got to them through us, and they give us a little kickback at the end of the month. And it helps pay for this gear, for travel to and from comedy shows and festivals and bands and everybody else that we sit down and talk with. That is supported in part by Amazon. So use that Amazon link. Also, how about this? You like free stuff? Go to the Audible link at milehighshow.com and use the code MILEHIGH at checkout, where you can get a free audio download and a free 30-day subscription just by using that code MILEHIGH at checkout. Keeping within the comedy theme, one of my favorite downloads that I've gotten through there is a audiobook by Steve Martin, Born Standing Up, A Comic's Life. It is narrated by the author, the wild and crazy guy himself. Born Standing Up, A Comic's Life traces his time as a child, as a budding musician and magician, and how he translated that into one of the biggest stand-up careers of all time, and then into movies and art and screenwriting and novels and all kinds of stuff. Steve Martin, a comedic icon. Born Standing Up, A Comic's Life. You can get that for free by using that Audible link and the code MILEHIGH at checkout right there at milehighshow.com. That's enough ads. Check out DannyLabelle.com for more information on today's guest, Mr. Danny Labelle, recorded at the Bird City Comedy Festival in Phoenix. I hope you enjoy it. First off, thanks for sitting down. This is...
I wasn't going to stand.
Yeah. Sitting down with me, I guess, is what I meant. This is a big get for me. I like I said, my shows are typically local. Get a lot of musicians, some uh-huh. local comics out of Phoenix and that. But what I do is an extension of the talk radio show that I do up there. I do a weekly show up on AM and FM radio up
in fantastic.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of local politicians and stuff.
Yeah, that's but, great.
Yeah, I'm limited to, you know, they kind of dictate what they want the show to go to. A lot of it's community events and a lot of town government events and things like that. Then they got another host that does like the entertainment stuff. They got another guy that does like business openings and stuff. So.
Okay.
And I hate politics, so I'm always sitting down with like the supervisors and the local mayors and stuff, and it's just not...
You got to find a way to make it fun for yourself.
Which is what I do. I kind of have fun with it, yeah. But in the course of doing that, I've been doing that about 4 years. I wanted to do something on my own. That's why I launched the podcast. So we're like started in late 2014, but my real interest, the funnest ones I have are when I get to sit down with comics. And knowing just a little bit of your history and listening to some of your stuff and pulling up old podcasts and stuff, I know you're kind of almost like a comedy historian in some sense. When did you start in the comedy and broadcasting world?
Well, I guess about 15 years ago. I wouldn't call myself a comedy historian, just more somebody who really enjoys the old timers, you know. But I couldn't tell you facts or anything. I just like it, you know.
Yeah. Now, if you mind me asking, how old are you?
34.
34. So I got a number of years on you.
Oh, yeah?
But you have, I'm 51.
Wow.
You okay. have, I just in listening to some of your stuff, and I kind of mention it, like, because I've mentioned you a couple of times on the show, like when we were up at Big Pine and last year at Bird City, I did a couple of podcasts with some of the guys down here. And you're like the originator of podcasting almost to a certain
pretty
extent.
Much, yeah.
When did you start with that?
2004.
Man, and that was through radio work that you were doing?
Yeah.
What? How'd you get into that?
Well, it just through my college radio station, and I had a roommate who was a nerd, and he told me about podcasting, this new thing that was starting out, and I said, you know, join the show and in exchange, get us podcasting, you know, so he did that. And it's not like I struck it big off of being a pioneer of podcasting.
The checks ain't rolling in.
No, but I mean, I do my podcast, which you've heard, which you were kind enough to tell me that you enjoy before the show, the Modern Day Philosophers podcast.
Yeah. And the website?
ModernDayPhilosophers.net.
.net, and there's a donate button right on there.
Yeah, use it.
So drop it in.
Not you. I meant, you know, people out there. But I've been very fortunate with that podcast that it's built a big listenership. So I'm excited for the podcasting of today more than the podcasting of then was such a struggle. You had to put in HTML code and all kinds of
stuff. Now, was that what you launched with? Was that the show that you launched it?
No. We used to do a show called Comical Radio, which was pretty cool, and we had a lot of people on it. But, you know, it didn't hit in the way that it did for a while, but then once all the big time people started podcasting, our audience quickly left us for the more experienced people.
Now, one of the things that really I enjoy listening with you, you know, listening to you go on your show and also on stage is you kind of bridge, we talked about this last night a little bit, you kind of bridge the old school comedy that you say you're obviously a fan of with the newer generation of comedy that you're more part of, kind of that newer generation, just with your, you know, your age, your mid-30s. Do you find yourself kind of unique in that with your age group and your class of comics that you've come up with?
Maybe,
because really reaching back to those roots.
You know, we lost Don Rickles
yesterday, right?
Very sad, and I was torn up about it. I mean, the guy was definitely one of my great comedy inspirations and somebody who I'd always wanted to meet and never got to. But we were in correspondence for a minute there about me trying to get him on the show. And his cousin and I spent Rosh Hashanah holidays together every year for the past, like, decade. Hmm. So I have so many stories of Don growing up in my head and stuff. I feel like I knew him. And I was really torn up about him passing away, and I was talking to some of the other comics here, and they're like, yeah, all right, you know, it's sad, but so maybe in that respect, I feel like a little closer to it, maybe. But
where, what do you attribute that roots to? Was comedy throughout your household? Did you get that from your parents?
No, I didn't grow up with any comedy at all. Certainly no stand up, but I think I attribute it to the fact that I always liked old people. When I was a kid, I used to hang out at the benches in Flushing, Queens, in front of our apartment complex, Mitchell Gardens. There'd be all these old people, and they called me the mayor of Mitchell Gardens because I would talk to them all. And I guess just from a very young age, I've always gravitated towards the elderly. So when I got into comedy, I got into elderly comics, you know. That's about the long and short of it, I think.
Well, family, like your brothers, sisters?
I have three younger brothers.
So you're the oldest?
Yeah.
Huh. And you got one brother who's also in production and things from your story last night, the YouTube.
Is he still in the biz? Or? He worked a production job, but he's not in production.
Oh, okay.
He got injured on the job, but he is a vegan, raw vegan chef.
Huh.
So, yeah. He's pretty cool, and he's got a job working at Erewhon in Los Angeles as their raw vegan chef for their raw vegan counter. He works their kitchen there.
Oh, wow.
And he went to study at a place called the Living Light Institute in Northern California, where he learned how to pretty much cook without fire, and everything he makes is delicious and beautiful to look at and healthy.
Wow. Whereabouts in Northern Cal?
It's in a place called Fort Bragg, which on the coast there.
It's a beautiful area up there. I had family that was about 30 miles inland from there, right on the 101. Mm-hmm. We used to go up there in a little vacations. Beautiful area.
What did you do on those vacations?
I slept a lot. That's what I did.
That's it?
Yeah. My mom and sister lived up there for a number of years, and my brother was up there for a while.
What does he do?
He's a mechanic, car mechanic. Mm-hmm. You probably passed through the town Laytonville, which if you ever went up to visit your brother when he was up there.
I did once, yeah.
Laytonville was exactly east of Fort Bragg on 101, and he worked in the only garage in town. So everybody knew it was a tiny little town.
Well, then why would they have more than one garage?
Well,
people fell out with it, I guess.
It was a big spot for people going up, like through going up to Pacific Northwest, Oregon, stuff like that. So it was a 101 had tons of traffic on mm-hmm. it, but the little town didn't. So everybody knew him for all over. He's in Tucson now, mm-hmm. but at the time, this was like late 80s, early 90s, and. I was working. I've always worked at least a job and a half. And back then I was working like two full-time jobs. And so when I would go up there, the first thing that would happen was my big pouch cell phone would lose service. My pager would kind of die out. And I would go up there and unplug for a few days and sleep and look at the trees. And then spend a few days there. Once I recharged, get on the highway and come back to the San Francisco Bay Area.
Wow.
And that's what I did for a number of years.
Well, sometimes you just got to recharge.
Yeah. Listening to you as a storyteller is extremely enjoyable for me. Growing up, knowing and watching a lot of the comics, from The Tonight Show, obviously, and the daytime talks, Mike Douglas, Merv Griffin, those guys. I was a big comedy fan as a kid in the 70s, but the most enjoyment I got out of watching comics wasn't necessarily watching them do their routines. I liked when they would sit down and, panel, I guess is what you call it, when they're talking to the host and just dialogue. And then when I first stumbled across podcasting a number of years ago, that's what I liked about it. It wasn't so much hearing routines and stuff. I enjoyed listening to that conversation.
Yeah.
And in recent years with storytelling shows and things like, The Moth and This American Life, things like that, I'm really in listener heaven listening to that because aside from being humorous, above all else, they're interesting to listen to. How did you start getting into that? Transitioning from stand up into storytelling, or was storytelling kind of always your strong suit?
Yeah, I really started as a storyteller, and then I was under the impression I was doing stand up wrong, so I had to I didn't have to, but I felt I had to conform to be more of a stand up, and so I did, but it never really suited me. I think I got good at it, in my estimation, but I never felt comfortable doing stand-up as a joke teller.
Yeah.
And when I started going back to my roots and telling stories and being like, oh, this is a thing I can do, that's when I started to feel like me on stage.
Yeah.
So you saw my show last night, and it's mostly stories.
Yeah.
But I still pepper in some jokes.
Yeah. Very funny, and that's why I say it. Listening to storytellers like yourself, shows like yours, the podcast like yours, they're obviously funny, but above all else, they're just interesting and captivating to listen to. Like you mentioned, Rickles, punch, punch, punch. Just he was a heavy hitter, joke teller, which is great too. But I like to, for myself, to hear the backstories on things, hear more long form stuff, and it's to me that's what podcasting is the best thing for me is that aspect of it.
I'm gonna say this might be controversial, but I don't think Don Rickles was a very good joke writer. I don't think his jokes were very good. What I admired about him was his energy and his delivery.
Yeah.
I think because and you can see in his later Letterman appearances that he made no sense when he was talking.
Yeah.
But nobody was any bit disappointed by it because his jokes were never his thing.
Yeah.
For it was the essence, it was the spark of life in him that people were attracted to. It was that incredible, incredible energy.
Yeah.
The incredible delivery that he had for, I had a better word, but it floated away from me. Still early and we were drinking last night. But it was, he had this wild persona that's what that's what people gravitated towards. But I don't think anybody's ever like, here, you know, this is my favorite Rickles joke.
Yeah.
You know? So his punches weren't even from the lines. They weren't punch lines. They were literally like physical punches almost, you know?
It was amazing listening to different comics and there's a documentary on Rick. Do you remember the name
Mr. Warmth?
Yeah. And when they're interviewing folks and they would go see a show, it was such a badge of honor to get nailed by him and get picked out for one of his zingers.
Because they just wanted his attention. Yeah. That's all it is. It's just that he noticed them. Because when you have certain personalities like that are so great, you just want a little bit of that attention.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know? To be part of it.
Just to feel acknowledged by by that kind of light, that kind of force, you know?
Yeah. Now, are you, your YouTube endeavors, your character Sammy, and some other things. How did you get involved in the multimedia aspect?
I like you make it sound like more than just putting a camera on me.
Well, I mean, you get pretty, you do the green screen stuff, right, and you do a lot of different things.
I have a green screen in the garage, and I just started playing with it. That's all. I just like to make stuff.
Yeah.
That's the truth of it, you know? I just like making stuff. And if it's great, I like making great stuff. If it's not so great, it doesn't bother me as much as it may other people. For me, I just like to create stuff and put it out there and see how people respond to it. And I move on to the next thing.
Take what's interesting to you and throw it out there and see who gravitates to it.
I have a friend who's like a really brilliant director. His name is Liam O'Neill. I'll plug him. And he's like a perfectionist. He puts out something every 5 years. And it's great. And everybody loves it. But that's not me, you know. I just throw out, and he's like, "Why?" You know, he always tells me, "You could just focus on making something great and stuff." You know, now I'm not knocking my stuff. I think it's all right, but I just like, you know, I like characters. Yeah. I like experimenting with ideas. I have an idea. I like to see the idea come to life. If I can make it come to life, I make it come to life. Yeah. And I'm not too picky with more than that. If I like it and I think, oh, that'd be fun, I do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about having a green screen in the garage. It's kind of like a big empty canvas, you know? And then I like to... Some people, you know, like Liam, I would equate to a painter who spends, you know, years on a painting and makes it perfect with the whatever style he's in or whatever. I'm like a guy with a doodle pad. You know, I like to just come up, make some sketches and throw them out there and keep sketching.
Nice. You're on your podcast. You've sat down with some of the biggest names in comedy over the years. What year are you in? What season are you in with Modern Day Philosophers?
Well, we're just about to enter season 8 of Modern Day Philosophers. We rounded off season 7 to plug away with... Yeah. Bobcat Goldthwait, and every episode we discuss a philosopher with the comedian who I'm talking to, and we try and draw some parables between the philosopher and the comedian. And now we're going to start, so that was season 7. Mm-hmm. We're about to start season 8 with Fred Armisen, the great Fred Armisen, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
I am a big fan of his.
Portlandia.
Yeah.
SNL. Who was your first interview for that, for the Modern Day
Matty Kershon? You know Matty Kershon?
No,
Kershon,
Matt I don't
Kershon.
Know the name.
He's a British comic, and very funny guy, a delight. Matty Kirchen, yeah.
Now you're who's I'm drawing a blank. Is it Alex that does
Alex
the,
Fasella
that pulls
wonderful
the
comedian
research?
In New York and a comedy writer and a comedian and a very sharp guy.
Now, how do you leave the choice, the choosing of the philosopher up to Alex?
Yes.
How? What kind of homework does he do to do that?
Well, I'll say, look, Alex, I'm going to be interviewing, let's say, Dana Gould, who I interviewed at the Bird City Comedy Festival.
I was watching the guys in the green room for a while.
Yeah, great guy. And I'll say, you know, here's some things I know about Dana. You know, he wrote for The Simpsons or this or that. And then see what you could find out. And then we'll compare facts. And then he'll boil it down and be like, "Oh, here are some three interesting angles we could go with this, or two, or sometimes he'll just be like, I chose one." And then if it's up to me, I'll pick, and if not, I'll trust that he'll do a good job, and then he'll find a connection between a philosopher and the, you know, for Bobcat Goldthwait, he picked a philosopher who talked about hell. Because Bobcat lit the Tonight Show on fire. So he always finds a good connection for everybody. Yeah. That the philosopher for Bobcat was Georges Louis Borges. I mean, I don't know these people, but Borges, I think, is the known name in philosophy, but I don't know.
Yeah. In listening to your shows, I'll recognize, you know, Dante, you did one on Dante. Was that with
Dante's
Colin,
Inferno,
I think?
Yeah, with Colin Quinn.
And I'll know the names. I have no idea what their philosophy was, or, you know, every once in a while something will click on there. But the genesis of doing that show had an interesting backstory as far as the modern-day philosophers linked to your, if I remember correctly, to your friendship with George Carlin.
Yeah, it was... Well, I met George Carlin through Jackie Mason. Jackie Mason and I were and still are good friends.
Yeah.
And I worked for Jackie on Broadway, selling his merch. And one of the nights that I wasn't working, he called me up and said, "You want to meet George Carlin?" And I went down, and it was a very amazing evening for me, where I hung out backstage, the three of us, me and Jackie Mason and George Carlin. And then that... You know, Jackie told George Carlin, he goes, "This Danny Lobel, he's an excellent, very bright young comedian. He's absolutely fantastic. Ignore the fact that he's overweight. He happens to be overweight." He always takes shots at me like that. Yeah. "Happens to be that he's overweight, but it doesn't matter." He's just a nut job. But anyways, that was enough of a seal of approval for Carlin, who absolutely adored Jackie Mason, was a huge fan of Jackie's since he was a little kid, or an older kid. But he'd seen Jackie, he and his older brother Pat used to watch Jackie Mason on Sullivan
Show
together, and they never want to miss like one of his performances. So he had huge reverence for Jackie. So getting that seal of approval from Jackie Mason was like, George Carlin gave me his home number and address. Oh, no, first he gave me his address, and I wrote him a letter, and then I put my phone number at the bottom of the letter, and I got a voicemail one day. I woke up, I'd missed the call, and I look, new voicemail. I listen, and he goes, "Danny Lobel, George Carlin. I'm going to give you my personal home number. Don't give it out to anyone." And that was the beginning of a really nice friendship with George. And when George passed away, I got a call that morning from Jackie Mason. And he goes, we lost more than a comedian. He was really a modern-day philosopher.
Yeah.
And that really... And I've heard other people say modern-day philosopher with regards to comedians, many times over the years. And I thought, well, that... Isn't that the great way to describe a good... And it really hit me when Patrice O'Neill... This is like a story of all the greats passing away, isn't it? Don Rickles, George Carlin, Patrice O'Neill. But Patrice O'Neill passed away, and I was shattered by that because he was another guy who I was very close with and who I really looked up to. And when he passed away, I was thinking why I loved him so much. And I was thinking, oh, because he was more than a comedian up there. He was a philosopher, yeah, too. You know, these guys are philosophers. And I started to think of all the comedians who I really love. And, you know, with Rickles being a good exception, because he wasn't terribly philosophical. I guess he could make an argument for it, but you'd be having to, yeah, make an argument.
You okay on time?
Yeah. You know, if you look at these guys like George Carlin and Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle,
yeah,
and Patrice O'Neill and Louis C.K., what they all have in common is that they're philosophizing up there. They're really great thinkers, and aside from being joke tellers. So those are my favorite kinds of comedians, are the ones who are analytically looking at the world and forming philosophies.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to do this show, and that's why I named it. Well, that's why I named it Modern Day Philosophers. But I wanted to do it just because I wanted to, once I figured out that all the comedians I liked were philosophy people, philosophers,
yeah,
I wanted to start learning actual philosophers. And I sat down and I realized I couldn't make heads or tails of it on my own. So I,
you know, might as well have a little fun learning.
Yeah. And it was Matt Kirshen who I said to my wife, I want to do a podcast. No, I said, I want to hire a tutor on Craigslist to teach me philosophy, because that's my budget. It always comes to Craigslist. You know? I want a couch. I want a philosophy tutor. You know? It's all Craigslist. So she's like, so I was going to put up an ad on Craigslist for $20 to a session to teach me philosophy. And she said, you can't even afford that. You know, she goes, she goes, why don't you just find a friend to learn it with you for free? You know, save money. So I was like, all right, yeah, that's an idea. And I start thinking, all my friends are really comedians for the most part. So I was at a party and I said to Matt Kirshen, and I'm not a very great socializer, especially at a party. And I always think I come off a little awkward or whatever. But, you know, I said, hey, you want to come over and learn philosophy?
Come over, look at my etchings.
And he goes, "What? You mean as a podcast?" And I immediately was too embarrassed to say that anything I had was actual, like, you know,
yeah,
outside of show business. People don't even want to. Yeah, as a podcast. So I was like, "All right, well, there's my podcast." I'll if two comedians sit down, you may as well be recording it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it didn't happen. You know.
Anybody that you haven't gotten that you got your eyes set on?
I really wanted to get Don Rickles on the show.
Yeah.
And he, like I said, I was very close with his cousin. And he got back to me through his people in an email saying he wouldn't do a podcast, but he would be fine to do any other kind of interview with me.
Really?
And that was 2 years ago. And the truth is, I didn't have anything else. And I thought about making a project just for that.
Yeah.
But then I was like, and then where does it air? And what? And you know, and I'm going to be like,
shopping around.
You know, it's just at that point, it's just like, hey, I just want to get to Don Rickles just to get to Don Rickles.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel right, you know? I wasn't going to waste his time just because I want to meet him as a fan.
It's never stopped me.
Yeah, I know, but I just thought if I had a real project, yeah, I'll wait until I have something that I could fit him into that would be a good use of his time, because he's an old guy and I don't want to waste his time with nonsense. Just a fan wanting to meet him didn't feel like enough reason. But I couldn't get him. And the other old timer that I really want to get, and I spoke to him on the phone, and he said he'd be happy to do it, but I haven't been able to get a date to do it, and that was a year ago already, is Mort Saul.
Yeah.
I'd really like to talk to him. Other than that, dream list would be Jim Carrey, Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Martin would be a very interesting one.
Yeah.
He's a deep guy. What was his...
Mike Myers.
What was Martin's book? Born Standing Up, I think?
Yeah.
Was that his? Yeah. It's a great book. Anybody you wouldn't do? Is there any... Let me throw you under the bus here. Maybe that's not a good question. Would you sit down with Cosby?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. In a heartbeat. I would love to. What a great, fascinating talk that could be, yeah. Right? Especially if I could get him to be honest and open up a little bit. I would love to talk to Cosby, especially now.
Yeah.
But I was always a big fan of his.
I grew up listening to those LPs, man.
Yeah. I love Brother Bill Russell. Cosby. I got to see him live once.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. You know, Bill Cosby the rapist, you know, I'm not a,
not a big fan there.
Not a big fan, but Bill Cosby the comedian, I still remain a big fan.
That's interesting because I've heard other public figures, other comedians, read some articles and things about how they can't separate the person from the art.
Well, that's silly.
I'm kind of the other aspect. I still have the LPs. I got a 7-year-old son. He listens to them. He loves them.
Sure.
I mean, you know, you take it at that aspect. You know, I like watching baseball. Half of these guys I definitely wouldn't invite into my house. You know, it's the same kind of thing. Musicians, the same thing.
Most art does not possess the evil of the artist. I think, you know, if the artist is in fact evil or whatever, you know, sometimes somebody's a real degenerate and their art is really, you know, degenerative too.
Yeah.
And then you probably wouldn't gravitate towards that art. But if the, look, Woody Allen's a good example too. He certainly did some questionable stuff, you know.
Allegedly.
But because it's like not official enough, people are just like still forgiving.
It's not a Roman Polanski thing where he had to leave the country.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not holding these people up ethically.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not looking to these people for ethical inspiration. For that kind of thing, I look to people who are holy.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, I'm a huge admirer of the late, great Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was the founder of Chabad, which is a big Jewish organization, and I'm obsessed with him. I love reading about him, hearing stories about him. He's incredibly inspiring, but not for material, not for comedy, you know? But there's different aspects to a human being, and certainly, spiritually, I'm not looking to Bill Cosby, but comedically, I still find him brilliant. You know,
huh? You're a spiritual person. Are you practicing Jew?
Yeah.
Did I phrase that right? Was it offensive?
I liked it. I thought it was good. It worked for me.
Yeah. Now, the acceptance and the possession of faith is not a real popular in the comedy world, it doesn't seem.
Right.
Do you feel you stand out in that aspect, or is that just another facet of Danny LaBelle?
I'm not sure where the distinction in the question lies. It could be a facet of me that stands out. Yeah. Right? It does make me feel alone. A lot of the time, I'm a believer in God. I'm a believer in the soul, in taking care of the soul. I think, as a Jew, there's so many, but I also feel like if you're a Christian or if you're a Buddhist or a Muslim, you have ways to take care of your soul there too. You know, I'm not saying this is the only way to do it. It's just the way that I have.
Yeah.
And so I like to use these tenets of Jewish belief to nurture and foster my soul, to protect it. Because it really breaks down to my body's in bad shape. I lost 40 pounds recently, but I'm still...
Oh, congrats. Right?
Thanks. And you know the struggle. I mean, I don't want to call you out.
People know.
But you and I, you know, I have to assume you're an addict as well when it comes to food. And it's a very hard addiction. People don't treat it as addiction. Unfortunately, people don't understand it because It's scary to people when they see somebody overweight. It reminds them of their own mortality,
yeah,
and their own shortcomings, and they also think, "Oh shoot, that could be me if I let myself go." And it usually can't be, you know. They really have to like change their psychology to yeah. such a large degree. But it's addiction, and you know, some people have coke addiction. You know, people are addicted to, you know, alcohol, or whatever. And some people have food, and so you have an addict's brain, and you have to sort of try and navigate your way through that. So, but it's connected to your soul. So, for me to have lost 40 pounds now, I don't think I could have done it without first nurturing my soul, because if your soul is not calm, then it's very hard for you as an addict to face addiction,
yeah,
and to beat it, because you're a lot of it is your soul is like jumping around screaming, and you're like, you know, trying to shut it up with food or alcohol or whatever to just sort of numb it.
Yeah.
So there's that, there's those two elements, and then there's also this the brain, which is completely disconnected to the soul, I feel. Unless you make an effort to connect them. But that's why I think there are some people who are so great intellectually that are completely atheist. And they're, you know, they're not. And then there's also brilliant people who are religious.
Yeah.
And I had a really hard time figuring that one out for a while. I just couldn't understand how I knew these great brain surgeons and heart surgeons and just great thinkers that were God believers. And I knew these brilliant, you know, philosophers and professors and comedians who were atheists. And I go, well, it's not an intellect thing, you know? It's not about intelligence.
Yeah.
So what is it? Well, there, it's the soul.
Yeah.
It's just some people have a weak or sick soul, and they let their soul go. Some people let their brains go, and so they're not intellectual. Some people let their bodies go. Some people let it all go.
Yeah.
You know? But for me, I think I have a very sharp intellect, and I have an even more developed soul. But my body is the weak link that I'm working on now.
Yeah.
So, come back to your question, when I see that a lot of comedians don't have faith and don't have, I don't see it any differently than the fact that I'm overweight, you know? I have a weak body, so they have a weak soul. So someone else has a weak intellect, you know.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. Everybody has their own challenge to work on, and you know, mine is physical.
Yeah. One of the wake up calls for me, cuz I've always been a big guy. I don't know, were you as a kid?
Yeah.
But what I remember, you know, in high school, just feeling horrible about myself. Now I look at those pictures going, man, if only I could be that size.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah.
My wife is about the size of one of my legs, maybe a little smaller. Hmm. And my little boy, he's, like I said, he's 7. Great shape, great looking kid, just very handsome and good natured and everything. And it's in the past, you know, 7+ years, it's like, you know, I got to do something because I want to be around for him in high school and above and watch him
get
married.
What are you
going
to do?
Huh?
Well, what are you going
to
do?
I've been trying to, trying to do things a little healthier. One of the big things for me was to switch my work. Like I said before, I was always two full-time jobs. I was working 80, 90 hours a week. And my move from California to Arizona back in 2004 was specifically for that. The job I was in, had I kept it and stayed where I was, I guarantee you I'd be dead by now. This, like I said, it was an 80-hour week.
So you got yourself out of an unhealthy environment.
But I continue the same mentality of, okay, I'm out of there, and then I would create other things, and I doubled up on what I was doing anyway, and then I continued that till he was born in 2009, and then in about mid-2010, 2011, when he was like 2 years old, I sat down one night at 4 a.m. at my desk in my office. I worked for a newspaper up there, and ran a photo studio at the same time and did side jobs and everything else. So it was just constantly running. My wife wasn't working. She was at home. She had left her job when she got, well, just before she got pregnant. And I was sitting there, you know, in the middle of the night, looking at what I had to do the next morning and what I had on the schedule. And I just started thinking that I see my son maybe 8 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 weeks later, I turned in my notice and quit my job. Had no idea what we were going to do. And it worked out. My wife got a full-time job, and I picked up a lot of part-time work and got hired for some outside stuff, some contract work, and we're making ends meet. I spend a lot of time with my son. I drop him off at school every morning, pick him up in the afternoon, and then after he goes to bed, I get the chance, you know, you're editing and things. I can do that at home. I have a home office.
Sure.
And I cram as much actual work, meeting with clients and doing shoots or doing interviews, whatever, writing, between the hours that he's at school. And then it works out nice because on Fridays, my wife is off. She works a four-day week. And the school up there is 4 days. So Friday is either family time when we can, or it's mommy-son time, which is great. So they get that whole time. Right. And then I'll go, you know, I'll catch up on things. So Fridays are typically my heavy days for work. And then I've been taking weekends off, other than this weekend, which now I sound like a complete hypocrite because tomorrow is my wedding anniversary.
Well,
and I'm down here
to make it up.
But no, we do that. Are you stuck on time there? Yeah, I know your phone's been blowing.
Sorry, no, I have a few things I have to get to, but I still have another 10 minutes.
Okay.
Is that okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great. I made the mistake one time of telling somebody. When we sat down to do an interview, I said, you know what? I'll ramble on and on, so when you got to go, you can just get up and walk away. And sure, about 20 minutes in, he just got up and walked away. It was funny. Real quick, I'd like to – well, not real quick. You mentioned Jackie Mason. I'd like to hear a little bit more about how you guys hooked up. How old were you when you started working for him, and how did that transpire?
I had a magazine I started when I was 20 in New York called The Comical, and I interviewed him for a cover of the magazine, and that's pretty much, I mean, there's a bit of a story to that, but the Yeah, I mean, I went to Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal, and I knew someone who knew his sister, got me backstage, I met him, I scheduled an appointment. When we got back to New York, I recorded with him on a mini disc player. That I was recording on at the time. Remember those?
Yeah, not
the mini discs.
No.
Well, they had a moment there.
CDs.
CD in a drive. It was just a tiny little. Anyway, they had their moment in the sun, and I went to play back the interview, and it was like I'd be like, you know, ask a question like, "So, who are your influences?" Well, So I was just going based off memory and trying to fill in the answers, like, in his voice. Well, you know, like, trying to write it as if it's him. But then he'd given me his number, you know. He said, if you have any follow-up questions, if anything wasn't clear, then, you know, you can let me know. So I'm calling him up. I say, hey, can you clarify when, you know, I asked you who your influences are, you know? What do you need to clarify who my influences are? What's to clarify? I told you I like Lenny Bruce and this and that. Okay, thanks. I'm typing that out, and then can you clarify on the, you know, how did you get started in comedy? What's the clarifying? So, you know, after like two phone calls, he caught on. He's like, "Let me ask you a question." He starts laughing. Did you screw up the interview? So I say, "Yeah." It didn't work out. The recorder, he says, all right, so fine, we'll do another one. So we met the second time, did another interview. At the end of that, I thought it went really well. And I invited him to come and do my original podcast, which was the college radio show, which this might have even been before we were podcasting it. I think it was. And then he said, he went nuts on me. He went ballistic. He's like, how much do you want from me? I give you an interview. Then you want another interview. I give you another interview. Now you want another interview. So he starts screaming at me. And I was like, oh, no, I blew it. I'm greedy. I'm an idiot. I'm a jerk. And I walked through Times Square so depressed. And then, you know, the next day I get a call from him. He goes, I think I was a little harsh on you last night. I didn't mean to blow up at you. I apologize. If you want to join me for a spaghetti, we're going to be at this Italian restaurant tonight. me and my manager and a friend or two, and you come down and I'll treat you to a spaghetti. And I was like debating if I should go. I was pretty intimidated and everything. And I went down there, and then I wound up doing impressions for him, and he loved my impressions at the table, and that was it. Then he was like, people have to hear these impressions. Are you going to be around tomorrow at the Aubon Pen? I'm going to be sitting outside. I have a friend who he's got to hear what you did those impressions. So I was like, all right. So I went there, and then I was doing it for his friend. And then he goes, what are you doing tomorrow? And the next thing I know, we're hanging out every single day. Yeah. So that was it.
And selling merch for him on his, was that when he's on Broadway?
Yeah, and then ultimately he says, you know, I never met a guy who was so broke with a magazine. So he goes, normally a guy has a beautiful, glossy magazine like this. I got some money, and you can't even afford a coffee. He goes, yeah, why don't you come and sell my merch on Broadway? So that's what I did. But I'll tell you what, going back to the weight loss thing, I'll tell you some little tricks that I learned along the way that have helped me drop 40 pounds. And it might be helpful not just to you, but to people listening out there. The first thing is, you don't want to eat foods that spike your sugar, because then your brain is unable to communicate to your body when you're full.
Hmm.
So that's the
carbs,
first thing.
Breads, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And probably 2:30 in the morning. Tacos at Jack in the Box is probably not a good idea.
Don't eat after 7 p.m. Just don't eat after 7 p.m. Anything.
Yeah.
Even if you're hungry. Even if you're starving. Drink water. And if you have to eat berries. Don't
berries.
Eat after 7
p.m. Berries?
Berries are very low calorically, and they're good for you. They have a lot of benefits. But don't eat after 7 p.m., even if you go to bed at 2 a.m., like I do a lot.
Yeah.
Just cut yourself off at 7 p.m. Say after 7 p.m. I'm on a fast, no matter what.
Hmm.
And that's your break fast. Break the fast.
That's common sense. I don't know if I can handle that.
Yeah, but once you see the results, you can handle it.
Yeah.
You drop like half a pound like that just overnight.
Oh, wow.
That's
a month.
That's a
15 pounds down.
Yeah, but you'll put it on throughout the day. But I'm saying, like, you burn so much from those hours. You got to stop. Just cut yourself off at 7 p.m. Water, you know, berries, that's it.
Hmm.
You want, you know, you could have greens, any greens.
Yeah.
You can have lettuce, a cucumber. But you know, stay away from the fruits and... And
from the sugars.
Yeah, fruits are full
berries
of sugar.
Don't have
not too bad.
Not as much as fruits.
Yeah. I mean, you don't go nuts, but you know, you have some berries, you know. And then so these are some interesting things. So don't eat, especially in the morning, don't eat any carbs. Don't eat anything that's going to spike your sugar levels, because it'll throw your eating off
gravy
for the whole day. Yeah, have them for lunch. You don't need to restrict food.
Yeah.
You don't have to say, I'm never eating this anymore or that anymore. But eat anything you want to eat, but eat at responsible times.
So you could burn it, and it won't trick your brain.
Yeah, especially if you want to eat biscuits and gravy, have them for lunch. Because if you have them for dinner, they sit in your system all night. If you have them for breakfast, they trick your brain, and they make you hungry all day, and your eating is terrible all day. Have them for lunch. Because... already, you know, you're almost at dinner by then, and you have dinner, cut yourself off at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
So that'll help a lot. Exercise is very important. Not as important for weight loss as diet, but exercise is good because it boosts your metabolism, and then you start burning more throughout the day every day. So you get more results. You know, I start exercising 3 times a week for an hour. It's nothing. You just have to do it. You have to put it in your schedule, and otherwise you never do it. You have to schedule.
What do you do?
Well, I started off with just light cardio because I couldn't handle more than that. I just walk on the treadmill. And then I took it up to a faster walk. Now I do some weightlifting. And the weightlifting is great because when you build muscle, then you burn fat all week long from that.
Yeah.
So that's really – there are all these little tricks, you know. So these are all important. Then I have an app on my phone, which I highly recommend. It's called See How You Eat, Shye, S-H-Y-E. and I'll show you it. I take a picture of everything I eat before I eat it, and it labels what time it is.
Oh.
And you know what it does? It just forces you to take a moment to acknowledge what you're about to eat.
To actually think about it before. Yeah.
And that's it. Only you see it. You can photograph anything.
Yeah.
You know, you want to photograph a giant plate of ribs? Photograph a giant plate of ribs. But that's important, too. And then, whenever you can, make half your plate salad.
Yeah.
So if you're eating mac and cheese or whatever it is, just make sure that you have an equal amount of salad.
Yeah.
So if you want to eat a ton of mac and cheese, eat a ton of salad also. Whatever it is, do a half and half.
Yeah.
Half salad, half the other thing. And that'll help.
All righty. Nice. I got to put some of those into action. And then next time you see me, you're not going to recognize me. I'm going to even have hair,
probably.
It'd be
funny if you just had a beard, you know. You look exactly the same. But you're wearing a fake nose and a beard. So that's my advice nutritionally. And there, you got my spiritual advice, my nutritional advice, and some comedic stories.
Nice. Real quick, if while we wrap up here, plug away on everything. You got moderndayphilosophers.net.
Yeah. And check out the podcast, Modern Day Philosophers. Really good.
Social media, Instagram, all that stuff.
Another podcast called The Mostly Bull Market, where I discuss companies with comedians and also talk about our financial shortcomings. It's very funny, you know, especially if you struggle with money.
I got to watch you record that one with Paul Verzi in Flag last fall. It was a little hilarious.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
So that's a fun podcast. It's not as thinky if you're not. The Modern Day Philosophers one, we get thinky, and the other one, we're just jokey. You know, we just have fun. And then I do a show on YouTube called Danny LaBelle's YouTube Show, where I discuss people's YouTube pages on YouTube with the YouTube star, you know. So, and then we cut to clips, like, you know, like a Tonight Show or something where you'd see them cut to a movie clip. We just cut to clips from their YouTube. So you get a sample of what people are doing on YouTube, because otherwise you really don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Are you going to watch 100 videos to see if you like somebody or not? But
excuse
this is like
you, short and quick.
Yeah, this will really give you a sample of what this person's creatively got going on YouTube.
Nice.
And then you could say, hey, maybe I want to subscribe to that channel.
Where do they find that? Where do they find your channel?
YouTube.com/Danny LaBelle.
Yeah, right under your name. Okay. Yeah.
And then at Danny LaBelle on Twitter, Facebook.com/Danny LaBelle, Instagram, Danny LaBelle. It's all Danny LaBelle.
Nice.
And then... you know, I got the Sammy videos. Which is
those are funny.
Those are fun, yeah.
Are you still doing the, what was the podcast? I don't know if it was a podcast or just a live show with the book?
Right. So I do a monthly show at the Improv called Bookshelf, if you're ever in L.A.
And you don't record those?
Yeah, I've been recording. I haven't done anything with it yet.
Oh.
But I have recorded.
What's the genesis of that? What's the format?
That came, you know, I'm Shabbat observant. I keep Shabbat, which is I don't work from Friday night sundown to Saturday night sundown.
Okay.
And so I have a lot of friends over on Friday nights. Many times different comedians will come and visit me after their set or if they don't have a Friday night show. And I come up with ideas, you know, to have fun with people. And one of the things, I had a bookshelf in the house, and I came up with this idea that pick a book off the shelf, turn to page whatever we say, like 52 or 29, and second paragraph, start reading until it inspires a true story from your life.
Oh, nice.
And then people started doing it. We had a lot of fun. And so I pitched a show to the Improv, and then I've been doing it there for over a year. And we have that show.
Nice.
So that's been fun.
A lot of fun. If you're just looking for some fun and clever stuff, your Instagram feed is a lot of fun to follow. I like that. You've been having some fun with Photoshop lately.
Yeah, yeah. I've been trying to make Instagram into a new place for creativity. So, for me, you know.
Well, I want to thank you for sitting down. Like I said, this was I cornered you in Flagstaff one night and was hesitant about pitching it, and you go, well, what are you getting at? I was kind of dancing around, maybe, hey, if I'd like to have you on the show, and I was dancing around it, and you just looked at me and go, what are you getting at? You got me on your podcast?
Yeah,
so
I'll
I'm
do
glad
it.
I was able to do it. It was a lot of fun. Let me let you get out and go get some lunch.
Just because I told these guys I'd meet them.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sitting down.
I could have talked to you all day. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Well, that was a lot of fun, and... The Modern Day Philosophers is a great, great podcast with some of the biggest names in comedy that you sit down, have a lot of laughs, and you learn a little something by listening to it. So thanks, Danny. I sure appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you through the rest of the festival.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
All right, thank you. Well, that was 132 with Danny LaBelle. I sure enjoyed recording it and talking with Danny. I hope you also enjoyed listening to it. Don't forget, today's show brought to you by Amazon, Audible, and BarkBox. Links to all of those, including the offer codes to get you free stuff, is available right there at milehighshow.com. We are also brought to you by the Big Pine Comedy Festival, taking place September 14th through 16th this coming fall, 2017. In Flagstaff, the Big Pine Comedy Festival at bigpinecomedyfestival.com. Make plans to go. There's going to be everything from great improv and stand-up shows to workshops and podcasting workshops and all kinds of stuff. Go for a day, go for a show, go for the whole weekend, but go to the Big Pine Comedy Festival, September 14th through 16th, 2017, in Flagstaff, Arizona. Thanks again to Danny LaBelle. Check him out at DannyLaBelle.com. Links are right there in our show notes at MileHighShow.com. I'll talk at you soon.